Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
As a human being, you are not one of them.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day radio show with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. And we're live again, Saturday night, July 24th, 2010, broadcasting on the Orion Talk Network. Here in the Sonora Desert, we're in the midst of our monsoon season. Our dew points are really been getting up there, dew points have been averaging about 61 to 65 degrees here, and our humidity is something like 35 to 40%. The atmosphere actually became quite explosive here about 2 or 3 days ago. We started getting a lot of rain. Anyway, tonight on our show, we're going to be joined by our special guest, Jay Widener, who has finally agreed to come on my show. I've been at him here for the last 3 or 4 weeks to try to get him on. Jay Widener is actually Jesse Ventura's guide on the True TV episode Apocalypse 2012. He was Ventura's guide when they showed all the murals and that at the Denver International Airport. So I have quite an important question I'd like to ask him. I don't know if I'll get the answer I want, but we'll see. Looking at the satellite imagery out in the Gulf of Mexico, it appears as though Tropical Storm Bonnie has devolved into Tropical Depression Bonnie at 2 p.m. West Coast time today. The maximum winds were only 30 miles an hour, gusting to 40 miles an hour, moving west northwest at 12 knots, pressure was at 10, 11 megabar, or I think that's millibars, 10, 11 millibars. So that storm is pretty much petered out. It's really something because it was aimed right towards, essentially aimed right in a straight line trajectory towards where that oil rig had went down in the Gulf there. It almost seems like we have some higher force watching over the storms that are going into the Gulf area for some reason. Well, that's a good thing. We got enough catastrophe going on everywhere without some monster hurricane turning into a Category 5 and coming into the Gulf, that's for sure. A number of earthquakes going on, folks. There's been a swarm going on around the Philippine Islands, and those have been averaging anywhere from a 5.6 to a 7.6. Now, as far as us Planet X researchers go, that would actually be 6.6 to an 8.6. So these are pretty strong out there in the Philippine Islands, even though the the depths of these are pretty deep. They're over 600 kilometers deep. Sorry about, I don't know if you can hear that background noise, but sorry about that. We also had a quake out in the North China Sea, a 7.0. That actually would have been an 8.0. let's see. We also had some activity off the coast of Australia. This was on July 18th. There was a 6.1 near the east coast of Australia. And also a 7.3 northeast of Australia. That would have been back around July 18th. Now keep in mind, northeast of Australia is where that coral sea bed had been rising like 13 or 31 feet a day. I can't remember the number now. John Moore also brought to my attention there's been like over 80-some earthquakes near the Katla volcano up there, and I think it's Iceland, since May 17th or May 18th. So there's a lot of earthquakes going on underneath that Katla volcano. I don't know if any of you folks know, but I was interviewed on Darren's show, The Front, over on Blog Talk Radio Network yesterday. I'll be posting that on my website eventually. This is actually the third radio interview I've ever granted or carried out with anybody, and I consider it to be the best one I've ever done. Even though Blog Talk Radio, they seem like when they have their caller on, the volume level's too low, but I guess that's just the way Blog Talk Radio carries out its operations. So that interview, I was on there maybe about an hour and 15 minutes or something. You folks may want to know that John Moore is going to be the guest on Darren's show, The Front, on Blog Talk on Monday, and that'll be at noon West Coast time, so you folks may really want to tune into that. Well, let's see here. I finally got an email from Lucas that he's finally agreed to come on my show. We're in the we're in the process of finalizing a time so I can get him on for an interview. So I really look forward to that. You folks really need to go to Lucas's website, therabbithole2.com. That's therabbithole2.com. Okay. Because he really keeps his website updated with news on Earth changes and things like that. He's got some great up-to-date news articles on fireballs that have been seen. I'm opening his website right now. If you go to on the left-hand column of Lucas's website, here's just a sampling of some of the fireball news. It's under cosmic events. The first one is man in Sussex hit by a meteorite from space. The second one, help wanted to solve a UFO mystery, whatever that is. Third one, meteorite fragments called Rosetta Stone. The fourth one, giant fireball with tail seen over Perth, Australia. And the last one, another fireball lights up the sky over Wisconsin. You remember back a few months ago, there was that big one seen over like five, six, or seven Midwestern states. Well, sure enough, Wisconsin had another fireball occur. You know, going to open up the link right now. This was posted by the administrator of the site, probably Lucas. I'm back on July 18th, so that would have been about a week ago. Video surveillance camera of one of the recent Wisconsin fireballs. Wisconsin's on a cosmic roll. Yesterday morning, just after 4 a.m., another bright as a full moon meteor blazed across the sky in the eastern part of the state. People from Janesville to Milwaukee to Oshkosh saw the meteor when they were up early walking their dogs and on the way to work. Unlike the April 14th fireball, this one apparently wasn't picked up on Doppler weather radar, so it's unknown if it produced any meteorites. The closest report to Duluth, Minnesota, I've come across is one received by our National Weather Service office from a caller in Iron County in northeast Wisconsin. Well, we're coming in the break, folks. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Light of Day with Chell and Dan Orion. going into our first break. Stay tuned. Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day radio show with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion, Saturday night, July 24th, 2010. Also wanted to mention the co-host for my show, John DiNardo. He was on Gianni Hayes' show over on American Voice Radio on Wednesday night, July 14th. Her show is called A New World Order Disorder, and he was a guest on there for 2 hours. I'll be archiving that as soon as John ships over the CD in the mail to me. I wasn't at home to record it live, so he got into a lot of scripture on that interview. That kind of bothered me, but anyway, that's who John DiNardo is. He gets into the scriptures. We've been having some sinkholes pop up around the world. Milwaukee had one here about 2 days ago. They had a big storm up there in Wisconsin. I'm going to read an email I got from my friend here as soon as I find it. This comes from a lady researcher friend who lives up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. I'm not going to mention her name on the air, but she gives a good summary of what happened with that storm because she lives in that area. The subject of the email, Southeast Wisconsin under weather warfare target. Parts of Milwaukee, it's either city or county, she doesn't say, but was under 3.5 feet of water as storms continued training along a stalled heat front since 4 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. 7.5 inches fell in 1 hour on Capitol Drive near the WTMJ radio studio during the first hour of the evening news on that date, Thursday, July 22nd. A driver was swept away in one of the torrential rivers where roads once stood. Large slabs of concrete over 7 foot by 6 feet were seen being carried down the torrent as stunned drivers looked in horror from their vantage point on higher ground. A large sinkhole swallowed up an SUV after the driver was pulled to safety, only to see all the traffic signals go under with it. The weather warfare training continues as the storms are lined up just east of the Mississippi River, and it is now 9:20 p.m. Central Time. By Red Baron is her name. That's actually a pseudonym for her real name. Anyway, I disagree with her. I don't believe this is weather warfare. What I think we're witnessing is Planet X gets deeper into our inner solar system, we're going to see massive flooding everywhere. This is historically one of the precursor signs as Planet X gets closer to Earth is massive flooding everywhere, and we sure are seeing it, by the way. And sure enough, in the course of me researching that sinkhole that was seen during the storm, I come across this back. This was posted on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Online Edition Saturday, June 24th of last month. Sinkhole traps WE Energy's truck. A sinkhole had formed Thursday on North 27th Street at West Wisconsin Avenue trapped a WE Energies truck. One of our drivers was at the intersection waiting for the light to change, company spokesman Brian Manthe said. That's when the rear passenger tire was pulled into the hole. The Milwaukee Police Department received a report about the sinkhole about 10:20 in the morning. The driver was responding to a reported power failure at a downtown Milwaukee building, Manthe said. The driver was not injured. The sinkhole formed about 30 feet from the location of a previous water main break. So there's another sinkhole. I mean, these things are popping up all over the place. We had one about 2 weeks ago in Tampa, Florida. There was one recently in the Kansas City, Missouri area. What me and John DiNardo think is going on are these, as Planet X gets deeper in, it's starting to molest the mantle of our Earth, and the Earth is essentially just starting to split apart as it molests the mantle. That's what we think is going on. Oh, let's see here. I got another email I wanted to read. This comes from a new person I added to my email list named Tonda. See, this email is from July 22nd. It's the subject of the email, Gulf of Mexico loop current broken, red alert. Risk of global climate change by BP oil spill. You know, it's something John Moore in his DVD entitled Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, when he put this DVD out about 2 or 3 years ago, he talked about this Atlantic thermal hailing conveyor. It's actually the escalator that takes the Gulf Stream up along the eastern seaboard and then comes back down along the west coast of Europe. And he was saying that the root cause behind all that would be Planet X. And now all of a sudden here we're finally hearing that the Gulf of Mexico loop current is essentially shutting down. This is, factual satellite images in the past several weeks are showing that the Gulf loop current is broken and may cease to function entirely. This will result in massive climate change and possibly an ice age for Europe. Major trouble brewing? More freakish weather on its way? The Gulf Stream importance in the global climate thermal regulation process is well assessed. The latest real-time satellite data maps of May to June, processed by Colorado Center for Astrodynamics Research, checked at Frascati Labs by the means of the SHT congruent calculus and compared with past year's data, show for the first time a direct evidence of the rapid breaking of the loop current, a warm ocean current, crucial part of the Gulf Stream. As displayed both by the sea surface velocity maps and the sea surface height maps, the loop current broke down for the first time around May 18th, generated a clockwise eddy, which is still active. Real-time satellites data maps, real-time sea surface height maps and sea surface velocity maps starting from April 22nd until June 9th, processed by CCAR 1 and 2 and checked by I'm not going to get into this, too many acronyms in that, but you folks may want to check that out, and you may want to go listen to Bill Deagle's Nutramedical Report radio show on the Genesis Network from Friday, July 16th, because he brings on an Italian scientist that is confirming all of this. It was an outstanding interview. That's Bill Deagle's Nutramedical Report from Friday, July 16th. I'll be coming back into the break here in about another minute or two. Oh, let's see. I want to talk about asteroids a little. We may end up bringing Jay Widener on about 9:45 because I still have some stuff I want to read here before we bring him on. So if you're out there listening, Jay, we'll probably bring you on around 9:45 West Coast time. Well, there's the break. After the break, we'll talk about some asteroid threats. You're listening to The Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Dan Orion. Stay tuned. Wow, that was a fast break. You're listening to Light of Day on the Orion Talk Radio Network with your host, Sheldon Day. We're live Saturday night, July 24th, 2010. Before we bring Jay Widener on, I wanted to get into some asteroid, talking about some asteroid threats here. This was put up on, I'm getting this one off Yahoo News, posted by originated posting by space.com Monday, July 19th. Congress proposes commission to study asteroid impact threat. Now, if you folks recall back on George Norrie on the Coast to Coast AM radio show said that on July 16th, which would have been 3 days earlier, that he reported that the WISE, the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer spacecraft, had discovered 25,000 new asteroids within the last 6 months. And 3 days later, we get this article here. Congress proposes commission to study asteroid impact threat. Lawmakers are paying new attention to how best to shield Earth from a bad day. Getting whacked by an asteroid or comet that has our planet in its crosshairs. A new bill introduced to Congress proposes establishing a government-sponsored commission to study the threat of a major space rock collision with Earth and how prepared we are as a country and a planet to face such a danger. There's a growing choir of concern regarding near-Earth objects, or NEOs, spotting them and dealing with any Earth-threatening gate crashers. While the annual probability of the Earth being struck by a huge asteroid or comet is small, the consequences of such a collision are so calamitous that it is prudent to apprise the nature of the threat and prepare to deal with it, experts say. Last month, Representative Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of Republican or Representative of California, introduced the new bill before Congress, House Resolution 5587, titled "To Establish a U.S. Commission on Planetary Defense and for Other Purposes." The bill has been referred to the Committee on Science and Technology, on which Rohrabacher serves as a member. Both sides of the aisle are now looking at the commission idea. Planetary readiness. We need to take the next step, Rohrabacher told Space.com. Our near-Earth object search and tracking program continues to move forward, but nobody's taking responsibility for protection. I am more confident than ever in our ability to identify potential threats from asteroids and comets, but it is critical to the future of humanity that we develop the capabilities to protect ourselves from those threats. Rohrabacher said that the Commission on Planetary Defense that he is proposing will review our planetary readiness for an impact event and make recommendations on how to develop an adequate response system to those threats. Remember just maybe about a month or month and a half ago, you recall Obama, the chief usurper, was down at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida and outlining part of his plan after the shuttles retire that we need to go out and land on an asteroid. So I wonder what that's really all about. Then I got an email here from Gilbert Erickson I'd like to read. He had commented about this. But first, besides all those asteroids, folks, the WISE spacecraft has also sighted 15 new comets. It has spied hundreds of potential brown dwarfs. Now, it's something that this was mentioned. I can't remember. I just pasted this into a notepad. It was off some mainstream publication, but here they go, hinting at the brown dwarf, folks, Planet X. WISE has spied hundreds of potential brown dwarfs, stellar objects that are bigger than a planet but much smaller than a star, and confirmed the existence of 20 of them, including some of the coldest ever known. So I thought I'd just throw that in. Anyway, Gilbert Erickson replied to this discovery of WISE on Tuesday, July 20th. I'd like to read it. He says, the WISE satellite system really is better for short-term survey work than for long-term tracking. It does not have a working cryostat to reliquefy helium gas. It has a supply of hydrogen ice in a big insulated container that lets it see down to 4 degrees above absolute zero for almost a year, which is good enough, but it has very good infrared optics, 4 different bands of infrared simultaneously, and an articulating viewing window that changes positions every 11 seconds without requiring the whole satellite to reposition, which can't be done every 11 seconds. It takes a snapshot for 11 seconds and then moves the viewing window to a new position, then takes another snapshot, net position, snapshot, new position, etc. In about 6 or 7 months, folks, it can map the entire sky with very high resolution, especially for infrared. Keep in mind, folks, infrared is that necessitative part of the EM spectrum that's needed to see Planet X. It's basically designed for short-term but large area coverage at very high resolution. No doubt it will nail Wormwood's position very accurately. You can virtually guarantee that it already has. If it has good enough CCD resolution, which is CCD, folks, stands for charge coupling device. So if it has good enough CCD resolution to be able to see brown dwarf stars and other star systems, then it can see Wormwood just fine. But before any Wormwood images are released to the public, they will be edited, or as NASA comments, it will be processed to remove false flag information that the public does not need to see. But the images that are allowed out to the public after having their false flags removed have been pretty spectacular. When you composite the WISE data-based IR images with other optical images from other astronomical databases, you get to see a lot more stuff. Astronomically speaking, it's a short-term, 1 year, technology, but a very good one. Once the data has been image captured and sent to ground bases, it can be studied for years to come. If we had years left to you guys, sorry folks, interruptions like usual never fails around my house. If we had years left to study it, which we don't, but that was the intention. Basically, for about $300 million, it was possible to capture wideband infrared information of the whole sky without any interference from water vapor in the atmosphere. Because there are no water-based clouds up where the WISE spacecraft is orbiting. And we are talking about many terabytes of visual information, a very slick investment for $300 million. As more and more optical images are captured and stored in databases around the world, this added information from NASA is a major step up in telescope technology and hopefully in computer-based study for anyone interested in astronomy, professional as well as student or amateur. There is some discussion about letting the WISE spacecraft continue to observe after the hydrogen ice melts in the part of the spectrum that it can see without the extra cold chilling. It won't go completely blind, but it will lose the ability to see the longest wavelengths of the infrared spectrum. It will be able to see part of the spectrum, but not as much. But extended service will cost another $6 or $7 million a year that was not included in the original development and deployment budget. Actually, $6 or $7 million is not that much when you think about it. It would be nice to see, folks, what the WISE can still see without the hydrogen cooling, since space is pretty cold anyway. Maybe they will just sell the WISE satellite system. It's in a polar orbit, so the space shuttle can't go chase it, without some major changes in normal shuttle operations. And the shuttle is supposedly shut down now, so the WISE will just be left stranded. Now, folks, between the South Pole Telescope and the European Southern Observatory equipment in Chile, they can track Wormwood just fine. Only overhead clouds can block out their views. But if the view is blocked at one location, usually the other location is clear. It's not hard to track Wormwood's inbound progress. All it takes is the right equipment and the budget to keep it going. If both locations get blocked out for a few days or even for a week or two, they can reacquire Wormwood's location by searching the last known position and checking the right ascension 18 hours neighborhood of its last known position. It's not that hard to do. They have been tracking it for years already, so they know very well where to look for Wormwood if they want to look at it. It doesn't move that fast, so it's easy to find. We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned. folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, July 24th, 2010. Sorry about the interruptions there in the background, but this is one reason I don't like doing shows, is because I always get interruptions from children. But anyway, I'm on the network, and I hope everybody's enjoying my programs. If you folks want to listen to any of my past shows, I archive everything. You can go to my archive subpage off my homepage, and you'll find all past shows that I've ever done on there. Well, the time's just flying here. Sorry to be holding Jay Widener off. It may end up being the top of the hour now when I bring him on. The time just goes way too fast. I have so much important news to cover. I did also want to mention on Bill Alex Progressive Technology Hour show this morning. You can go to vortexnetworknews.com. He had an interesting lady on his show this morning, and I'm going to find the email here so I don't screw up on anything, because I like to put my information out just right on the money. Yeah, so if you folks go to vortexnetworknews.com, you can listen to the MP3 archive Bill Alec did this morning. He had a... Well, actually, it was Aurora Light's show. That's Bill Alec's wife. She had a fascinating interview with author Ann Eller. Ann was the secretary to the renowned astrophysicist Dr. J. Allen Hynek. She wrote an intriguing book about the return of Planet X, which is called Dragon in the Sky, Prophecy from the Stars. So I caught the tail end of it this morning. It sounded pretty good, so I would highly encourage folks to go there and download that MP3 and check that out. Now, at some point of time, folks, there are going to be some form of evacuations along the Gulf Coast. It's hard to determine how that's really going to play itself out, but apparently, you know, it seems like it is going to take place, because earlier this year I discovered this NASA contract that was awarded to an outside subsidiary of Prudential, and this was like a $73 or $74 million contract, folks. Now, I stumbled upon this in my own research, and I shared this with John Moore. Never since I've shared that with him, he's considered me his research associate. But anyway, this NASA contract awarded to an outside vendor named Prudential Relocation Services gave NASA 2 years to start relocating their own people. Now, initially, I had heard John Moore on his shows and on his DVD talking about the entire domestic division of the CIA relocating out to Denver, and that was only like something like a 24 million dollar contract. I don't know the exact number, but here we got NASA a contract worth three times more than the CIA's relocation allocation. Gave NASA up until September of last year to move their own people. Now, keep in mind, most of the NASA facilities are along the Gulf Coast, and we got the Kennedy Space Center in Florida where they launch the shuttles, and coincidentally, there's only two more shuttle flights left. So makes sense that NASA may be aware that they may see evacuations themselves. So connecting the dots here becomes pretty critical in this research. Like I've pointed out, the topic of Planet X is not a matter of looking for smoking gun bulletproof evidence that, oh, there it is. We got NASA's going to mail me an image of it tomorrow in the mail. Not going to happen that way, folks. Not going to happen that way. Like Gilbert Erickson pointed out in the prior interviews I did with him, first of all, you have to be looking in the right part of the sky, which most astronomers don't even know where Planet X is. And Robert S. Harrington, the supervising astronomer of the U.S. Naval Observatory, told us that it'd basically be in that swath of the sky between right ascension 14 hours up to, I think Gilbert said, 21 hours. So that essentially puts Wormwood right about, right ascension 18 hours. Secondly, you have to be in the southern latitudes in the southern hemisphere, and you have to have either infrared or ultraviolet optics adapted to your telescopic instrumentation to see it. There's a number. Also, it's surrounded by an extreme dust cloud. So, you know, there's a number of factors they have to be considered here, and actually being even having the slightest chance to see it. So, like I said, this planet, this topic of Planet X, it's not a smoking gun bulletproof evidence type thing. It's a matter of mountainous, and I mean mountainous, circumstantial evidence. As a matter of fact, I started assembling a bunch of folders so me and John DiNardo can start collecting a lot of this evidence before it disappears. And if anybody out there behind the scenes wishes to do anything to my computer, I back up everything from those folders on a daily basis. So you can try whatever you want, because I have all the information backed up on a daily basis. Okay, we're going to see how long we have left until the break here. Next break starts at 58 minutes and 50 seconds, so I hate to bring him on just for 4 minutes and then have to make him suffer through the long top-of-the-hour break. I think we'll bring him on after the top-of-the-hour break. I don't know if you folks know this, but at the Denver airport, I've received some emails here from a guy on my list named Eric W., and he points out that on one of these Denver airport murals, and this is what we're going to be talking about with Jay Widener after the top of the hour, is his little tour there at the Denver airport from Jesse Ventura's True TV episode. Anyway, this email shows a whale in oil on one of these murals. And there's another mural that actually depicts Planet X coming in. If you folks would like me to email you pictures of that, please feel free to do so at gem3intucson@q.com. That's gem, the number 3intucson@q.com, and I'd be happy to share those with you. By the way, if you go to my archives miscellaneous subpage, I also have a link whereby you can view a smorgasbord of Denver Airport pictures, a lot of which I took a few months ago when I flew up to Wisconsin. I actually got to switch planes at the Denver airport on my way up to Wisconsin and on the way back. And I actually visited the very interesting parts of the Denver airport on my return trip back. They make it a hassle to see that stuff. You actually have to ride a train underground, and then you have to go through security again to get back to your concourse for your departing flight. But I took a bunch of pictures and got them all posted on my archives miscellaneous subpage, like I said, if you want to check those out. Now, I don't know who sent it, but I think it was also this guy, Eric W., that's on my email list. There's also a movie out there called Comet Impact. That's another one I'm going to have to check out, to find out what year that came out and what that all shows, because, you know, they're showing us so much in the TV shows and movies to tell us what's coming. We got Deep Impact. We got Armageddon. We got 2012. We got the movie Knowing. I found this movie Solar Crisis. I watched that. Now, that turned out to be sort of a dud, but it had Charlton Heston in it. Now we got this new TV show called Colony coming out at the end of this month. It's about a group of survivalists in New Orleans after some living in a post-apocalyptic world because of some biological attack that occurs. So sure, they're conditioning us with all this stuff. I think it's because it's their twisted sense of mentality of saying, at least we told the masses what was going to happen to them before they all get wiped out. Anyway, there's the end of the first hour. We'll be back after the top of the hour break with our guest, Jay Widener, if he's still there holding on for me. You've been listening to the first hour of Light of Day on Orion with your host, Sheldon Day. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.